Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Scientific Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Berry, joined by the one, the only Mr. Darren Shrewsberry Jr. And Darren, we have not a lot to get to in this week, but I think it's going to be a good topic of conversations we've got going on here. We will start with the biggest news in the NFL, and that is Justin Fields being traded from the Chicago Bears to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a sixth-round pick that could become a fourth-round pick if he plays 51% of the Steelers' offensive snaps in 2024. So we're going to discuss this at every possible angle, but I want to start out with the obvious question. Did the Bears get screwed?
The Bears screwed themselves. And the more so for one, I'm not going to say I believe their excuse of we did right by Justin. I don't believe that for a single second. Because apparently they had offers for higher than what Pittsburgh was offering. I don't believe that excuse for a second. But also, I'm still looking at this like, I am by no means a Justin Fields fan at all. Like, I'm not saying he's horrible, but he's not the greatest thing ever. But the way all of this went down is just absolutely disrespectful. And I hope in some way Fields gets his revenge, because this was all ridiculous. They've been talking. The media pundits, and yes, I'm going to blame the media on this one, have been speaking it into existence from day one that Caleb Williams is the number one pick and the Bears have the number one pick, therefore they have to pick him. It has been spoken into existence for no other reason than they just wanted to keep saying it. And so much so that they, when Chicago was picking up all of these weapons that I have said consistently that Justin Fields needed, the only thing that came out of it was Caleb Williams has a new weapon. The motherfucker ain't even there yet. What are you talking about? It was infuriating how much disrespect the media was effectively pushing towards Justin Fields by just immediately shaking off the fact that there's no way he's back. I knew damn well he was going to be gone. But I didn't agree with it the entire step of the way. I didn't agree with it. And I still don't agree with it. Meanwhile, Pittsburgh may very well have pulled off one of the greatest steals in the history of the combination of steals in the history of the NFL. Because they've got extremely low risk and potentially extremely high reward in that quarterback room right now.
For less than $5 million.
For less than $5 million. So if anything, Mike Tomlin's out here playing interdimensional chess. And Chicago decided they just don't give a damn about winning football games ever.
Here's my thing. The Bears played fairly well at the end of last year. I don't know why you wanted Caleb, are we even sure that Caleb Williams is going to be the guy? Like, is he the next Patrick Mahomes? Is he the next Tom Brady? I highly doubt that. I'm not saying he's not going to be good, but here's my thing. If I have a known commodity at a position like quarterback, I can't envision a scenario in which I, as a GM, without having a, if you don't do this, I'm going to fire you edict from my owner. And even then, I probably wouldn't do it. To go, I'm going to take this unknown commodity versus a known commodity that I think happens to be pretty good. Now, if this is a clear upgrade from your present situation at quarterback, by all means, draft the kid. Got no problem with that. But is Caleb Williams really going to be better than what Justin Fields is? He had no offense. The Bears right now have more of an offense with whoever the hell was sitting behind Fields and is technically the starting quarterback. If they had to go out and play a game right now, than they did at any point with Justin Fields last year. And that's not because Fields isn't there. That's because they've gotten weapons since then. What did they get, Keenan Allen?
Yes. Yep. And then who else did they get? Not DJ Moore. DJ Moore left, right?
The Swift kid from Eagles.
They got DeAndre Swift, yep.
They've added people. They've added people who can gain yards and touchdowns. What? Someone please tell me how the Bears haven't screwed Justin Fields. I mean, really? Look, I'm not saying that Caleb Williams won't be good. But to sit here and anoint him and say, oh, this kid is the next unmissable hot commodity. Do you know how many times people thought the unmissable kid, they missed the unmissable kid? I'll give you a name. Jamarcus Russell. Huh? He was supposed to be great. What happened there? I'm not saying Caleb Williams is going to be that guy. But I'm saying I don't know that. I'm pretty damn sure Justin Fields is pretty good because he resurrected an offense that had no pulse and gave them some kind of a pulse in the last few weeks of the season. I saw that.
Yeah, when he was on the field, he made a difference for the team. He gave him at least some sort of a shot with the very few weapons he had.
Not only that, but they gave Matt Eberflus like 1 year, right? They didn't fire. So they didn't hand him a new contract. They basically said, all right, this is your year. So you're really going to tell me that if you're Matt Eberflus, you're the Bears, you're going to go, okay, GM, head coach, you're going to get 1 year with this kid. And if it doesn't work, you're fired. What kind of a ruthless machine is that?
Yeah, I have no clue.
Like, this, why? Why? Not to mention the fact that I don't know how much of this I believe. I really am skeptical about it, but the mere fact that it has been reported must not be ignored. The whole Caleb Williams wants this, Caleb Williams wants that, Caleb Williams' dad wants this. Do you really need that kind of a firestorm around your organization as opposed to Justin Fields, who by all accounts shut up, put his head down, and went to work?
Yeah, I've seen all those, and let's just be, I'll say exactly what I said about the Bill Belichick stuff. Too much is coming out to just say, oh no, this is all just speculation. Too many things are coming out. I mean, from the very beginning, it was, oh, he wants a stake in the team. And then there's the reports going, oh, yeah, he's supposedly demanding that no one look him in the eye because they have to earn his respect. And if that's true, I say, bitch, you're the rookie. You own everyone else's respect. Fuck you. If I'm a guy in that locker room and he goes and I'm, you know, speaking to him and he tells me to not look him in the eyes that I have to earn his respect, I'm probably punching him in the face.
I don't care if you're the fourth string punter. If you've been in this league longer than a millisecond, you get to do whatever you want with the kid.
Yeah.
That's just the fact. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not in love with all that stuff. I'm just not. But let's turn our attention to the Pittsburgh Steelers, because that is really it's the hot thing right now, talking about the Steelers because of the moves they made. The AFC North is wild. You got the Browns, who seemingly have found something. The Ravens are the Ravens, and they just got Derrick Henry. The Bengals, you would expect, would have a bounce-back season because, quite frankly, it can't get much worse. And then you've got the Steelers here, who made the playoffs with three damn quarterbacks last year. They signed Russell Wilson, and they're only on the hook for, like, what, $1.1 million, $1.2 million? Something like that?
Yeah, not much.
And then you go and get Justin Fields. Yeah, you gave up an arm. You didn't even give an arm. You gave up nothing for Justin Fields. So here's my question to you. Did the Steelers, I said it already, but I want to focus more on, like, did the Steelers just swindle the NFL, and did they make themselves with this and then the signing of, like, Patrick Queen and getting rid of Kenny Pickett and getting rid of Deontay Johnson, two divas in that locker room, did the Steelers put themselves in a position to really make a run at the AFC?
I think so. Because the offense and the quarterback play were absolutely the worst parts about that team. And the offense got slightly better once they handled their other situation. What was it, at Canada, who everyone wanted fired. And now they've gotten rid of all of the quarterbacks in that room, to my understanding, that had what a combined maybe 13 touchdowns or something like that, a very, very low amount of touchdowns. And you have Russell Wilson, who was starting to get back into Russell Wilson form. I don't think he'll get back to prime form, but he was getting back into the things that, you know, we know he could do. And then, of course, you've got Justin Fields. So, yeah, I think the Steelers made some pretty intelligent moves.
I can't disagree. I mean, this is one of the things that, like, this either goes really well or it backfires. But either way, like, you took a shot.
Yeah, and if it backfires, you're not out that much money.
No, and it's easy to reset.
Yep.
It's not truly bad. The AFC is going to be fun. Might not be fun for the Patriots, but it might be fun. We should mention one more thing here. In addition to Keenan Allen coming over to the Bears, Mike Williams is now a member of the New York Jets. So, let me ask you this. As a Patriot fan looking at the New York Jets, and I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say, but I have to ask you anyway. Do you see the Jets in any better light given what they've done in trying to shore up the offensive line than getting Mike Williams, basically a walking big play? I think I saw something this morning, like one of every four catches he makes is a big play downfield, whatever you want to define that as. Mm-hmm. I would assume 20 or more yards, but that's just me. Do you think the Jets have anything, or is it just going to be the Bills and Dolphins battling for the AFC East like it has been the past few years?
I think it was a good pickup. By no means do I think it was a bad decision. But I'm still, again, yeah, my obvious bias is this is the New York Jets. They will find a way to screw it up and underutilize him, or heaven forbid he gets injured, and it's another worthless year. I still anticipate it being a worthless year, but. No, I mean, absolutely a good pickup, and offensive line moves good, we'll have to see.
Let's switch back to the NFC now, and let's talk about Aaron Donald retiring. I did not read the article in which I saw the quote from, but I did see a headline that essentially said, he lost his passion for the sport. That's why he retired. I was kind of struck by the timing of it, although you can't determine when someone decides I don't want to do this anymore. That's up to them and them alone. But were you as shocked as I – well, were you shocked? Because I was in the moment that I thought about it. I'm like, well, he teased this after they won the whole thing 2 years ago. And you know what we've been saying. If you're thinking about it, you're kind of halfway there. So I can't say I'm – oh my God, this is the most shocking thing ever. But it's still the moment like, oh, okay. So what were you surprised by this at all?
Not as much, but I was still like, wow, like because of the impact he has on the he has Geno Smith going, oh my God. Like the impact his presence has on that line, like you don't want to be staring him down because it's not going to end well. I mean, he was what the only other player Barry Sanders was the first one to play 10 seasons and make the Pro Bowl all 10 seasons. He was Defensive Player of the Year 3 times, right? Multiple other accolades. And, of course, got a Super Bowl ring. So, I'd say he did just about everything one could do. And he did it in 10 years.
Which is insane, because it felt like he'd been there forever, but obviously he hadn't. When I sat down and thought about it, I was like, this is a tremendous loss for the NFL. Not just because he's a great player, but didn't it feel like he was the last remaining defensive player that everyone kind of undisputedly said was good? Like, he was the face of NFL defense. In a league that is dominated by offense in every sense of the word, he was the one outlier, the one remaining defensive player that we all looked at and went, yeah, this guy is good. And everyone knew his name. You might admit, like, okay, we all know Sauce Gardner's good. If you don't follow the NFL religiously or follow the Jets, you don't know his name.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald was a household name. And I'm curious to see who picks up that flag from him and becomes the guy that everyone knows. Or is that era of the NFL over? Is he the last remaining defensive stalwart that everyone knows their name?
I would say when we see TJ Watt, I think he's like that trickling last bit, because I mean, he should have been the damn defensive player of the year this year.
I'll give you that. I've forgotten about TJ Watt, but yeah, that's a good point.
But definitely in that realm. I don't think I'm gonna make a case for Myles Garrett. I don't really, no disrespect to him. I just don't think I just don't think it fits. Like, I don't hear Myles Garrett and think, ah, he terrifies me anywhere near as much as Aaron Donald does.
No. No. One more bit here on the NFL side of things. Oh, one more thing about Aaron Donald. I really wish we had the schedule out now. And I say that because I want to know who the Rams play the first week of the year. Because when he retired, the way that other team approached that game changed in an instant. And that would have been fun to have that discussion. Like, oh, they're going to play this team. Like, let's say we're going to play the Bears. Okay, well, if you're Caleb Williams, you might breathe a little bit easier knowing Aaron Donald's not going to come and flatten you unless from the first play of the game.
Yeah. 100%.
Now, on to what I was originally going to, and then I came back to it. There's a bunch of rules being put out there and proposed by teams ahead of the league meetings. We're not going to get to all of them, but I do want to talk about this. There's a rule proposed by the Philadelphia Eagles. It's an alternative to kickoffs. Essentially, what it is it can only be done no more than twice in a game, and you have to be trailing. Can't be tied, can't have a lead, you have to be trailing the game. Instead of an onside kick, it's a 4th and 20 from your own 20-yard line. The line to gain is the 40. If you get it, you keep the drive alive, and you keep possession. If you don't get it, whether that be a stop or a defensive score, as normal. So, Darren, we've heard this talked about a few times for like a 4th and 15, but this time it's a 4th and 20. Is that too long for you, or is it just right?
I think 4th and 20 is honestly too long. I think I was, if any of it, I was in favor of the 4th and 15. I'm still not entirely sure how I feel about the proposal at all, like in general. I almost would rather not have it, any of them as an option, but the a 4th and 20, just, I know it's not supposed to be a gimme, right? But not even a 4th and 10's a gimme. So that's why I'm just like, eh, I don't know. At this point, why are we even debating if we're just going to make it as hard as humanly possible? When, but I guess when you're putting it in comparison to an onside kick, basically anything is easy.
Yeah, I have long felt that I've long been in your camp that 15's a long way. Then I started thinking about it, I'm like, have we seen, like, look at the off, like, have you seen the offenses in this league now? It's like 4th and 20 is what now, what even 5 years ago, I would argue, what 4th and 15 was. Mm-hmm. We've got chunk plays now. So in the moment you're looking at them like 4th and 20, and then you go, you know what, that's probably about right. That's probably about as tough as an onside kick would be. But it's doable. I'm with you. I don't want to eliminate the onside kick, but I think if you ask us deep down in our heart of hearts, we probably know that in our lifetime that's going to be gone from the game, if not in the next few years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it does feel inevitable that it will be gone. Parts of me just goes, please don't.
Speaking of kickers, I saw this on Pat McAfee's show. I don't know if it was today or I saw a clip. I didn't watch the Pat McAfee show today. I saw a clip of the Pat McAfee show. But he was talking about the Colts have opposed a rule. You know how in the last 2 minutes, the first half and the end of the game, there are no more coaches challenges?
Yes.
The Colts have proposed a rule to end that. The Colts are saying, yeah, you should be allowed to challenge anytime, particularly in the most high leverage situations in the league.
I agree.
And do you agree with the Colts?
100%. I think to have there's no benefit to it, because we've seen time and time again where that has absolutely ruined teams. And of course, again, this is coming back to a referencing a rule that lasted a season and was basically ineffective, but the PI review, that would have been a perfect instance where you're under 2 minutes, that rule that happens, an absolute wrong call or no call, and I have the option to challenge that. I never understood, other than the 2 minute warning, what the significance of those final 2 minutes are, other than the fact that a 2 minute drill, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the only thing I could think of as any type of rebuttal to this, and I don't think it's that valid, but it's the only one I can think of that people would be using, right? Is, oh, well, your 2 minute drill, you're ruining the flow of the game. I'm sorry, I don't give a shit about the flow of the game. You want to talk about the flow of the game? I'm gonna ask you to stare at the TV and count how many damn times you get a 15-second blurb from the commentator and go straight back to a commercial. That's how you fix the damn flow of the game, if you're actually that concerned about the flow of the game.
But broadcast partners.
Screw the broadcast partners. No, but
there we go.
That's a joke. But
is still, it though? Like,
yes and no. Yes, in that I perfectly understand that this is what funds a lot of the league. But I'm also of the understanding that I don't give a shit about which companies. they can be out $10 million more dollars in a year. I don't give a shit. It is pennies to them. But really, like, a flow of the game is not if anyone tries to argue that, it's very, very rarely going to be a good argument, because the commercials are already the biggest problem there. That's what should be addressed if anyone actually gives a damn about the flow of the game. If you're not willing to address that, you don't care about the flow of the game.
No,
it's a flawed argument. Sorry.
No, it's also a fraud argument, but. I didn't want to go here, but I feel like I wouldn't be doing my job right if I didn't. In the comments section of said reel from Pat McAfee's show, Pat was questioning why the rule exists. The no challenges inside 2 minutes, all reviews come from the booth. And someone said, well, that's how the NFL rigs the game. It's because they take it out of the coach's hands and it's entirely a league decision. And that's it. The coaches have no say in it. The league can do whatever it wants inside 2 minutes. And that's when, especially in games that are decided by less than a touchdown on a regular basis, that's the most important part of the game. And I don't want to – I'm not saying – I believe that. I'm saying that's what someone else said.
Yeah.
But I will ask you, is that a reasonable conclusion?
You know, the when you mention simply bringing up the Wigan games, it brings up a comment I saw related to the NBA, where one of the players recently – well, fined like $100,000 for accusing a ref of having a stake in the game. And
yeah, he did a dollar sign right. This, he made a money sign like right to him.
Yeah. Now this is it brought up a deeper point. Whether I think anyone's wigging the game, right, it's hard to say. We can all think if we can all, if it makes us feel better in the end, right? If it makes us feel better that our team lost or worse, I would feel worse. But it brings up the deeper point of we've been having these discussions and we have to really think about the impact of these types of, well, plays, calls, reviews, penalties, etc. I feel like they have to be under more scrutiny. Because we're in the rise of sports betting. We're having consistent issues with players betting on their own teams or players or coming out the players are betting on the teams or the Jaguars guy, a part of the organization, who got so darn addicted to gambling that he somehow managed to steal $22 million from the team to fuel his gambling habits.
Shohei Ohtani's interpreter was just fired by the Dodgers today for allegedly taking millions out of Shohei's bank account and using it to bet with an illegal bookie who has been under investigation by federal authorities.
Yeah. So it's not without reason to start questioning that. It's a little more – it's a little – without a little less reason to accuse someone of doing it, but it's not without reason to consider that as an option for some of these. I do not think it's the driving factor, but it is becoming very clear that this is an issue that is running not just rampant through the NFL, but potentially through the NBA. I haven't seen any evidence of anyone actually getting into this issue in the NBA. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Well,
and you have seen it in the MLB.
You're forgetting about there is an instance back in like the mid-2000s, like right when we were starting to get into sports. There was a guy named Tim Donaghy, something like that. He was a ref of the NBA, and he got found out for betting on games that he refed. Bro went to prison.
Obviously I wouldn't have been aware of that. But are there any modern, not modern, any like within the last couple of years that you can think of happening?
Not that I can think of, no.
And again, like I said, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I just, nothing came off the top of my head. But it's not surprising at all that you have the deeper history knowledge on that.
And I'm not even an NBA guy. I just happen to remember it from when I was a kid going, oh, dude, this dude messed up.
Yeah, you screwed up, man.
Yeah.
So it is becoming clear that it is an issue that we do have to be concerned about.
And that, Roger Goodell, is how you protect the integrity of your game, not going after an innocent quarterback. I'm over Deflategate for the most part, but I don't think I'll ever truly be over Goodell using as his defense as to why he's going after Brady and trying to crucify him as the integrity of the game. Like, It was a 30-point blowout. They won the game like 45-14. The Colts were never winning that game.
Yeah.
It's not like it was a 3-point. If it was a close game, I would get it. But it was over by halftime.
Yeah.
By the time they picked off the ball and they even had a hint of something going on, the game was over.
Exactly.
Let's move on to college. Let's start with the team that didn't disappoint us. Well, I won't even say that. The men's basketball team at West Virginia, given everything they had faced, put up a very valiant 9-23 effort. 9-23 is by no means West Virginia standards, but when you consider all the circumstances, it wasn't that bad. And they competed in almost every game they played. They never stopped trying. They just didn't have it. Let's start with the women's basketball team because they are playing in the same region as Iowa, the number one overall seed in this tournament. Mm-hmm. No, South Carolina's number one overall seed. I'm sorry. They're undefeated. Iowa, I guess, is lost. Anyway, the point I'm making is this. Iowa has Caitlin Clark, who is the best player in women's college basketball, nay, the best player in the country in college basketball, period, men's or women's. She is the highest scoring player in college basketball history, men's or women's. She is a downright rock star in this sport, in sports in general, and she should be. But that didn't stop Mark Kellogg, whose team has to win a game before they get a chance to knock off Caitlin Clark, from coming out and saying after the bracket was revealed, let's win a game and send Caitlin Clark packing. Darren, do you have a problem with Mark Kellogg opening his mouth about a game that he may not even play against? Because mind you, Princeton's not that bad. It's an 8-9 game, so it's about as even as you can get. And oh, by the way, Princeton's won their opening round game the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to what we've always said, especially in the prime Patriots days. Do not give these teams players anything. Do not give them bulletin board material. Don't do it. I mean, there's it's a different thing to sit there and tell your team in private, this is what's going to happen, right? This is our goal. Obviously, your goal is to go as far as possible, and if that includes beating the hell out of Iowa, so be it. But to sit there and directly target them as if you've got some sort of deep-seated history with them, if anyone should be saying that, I would have expected someone out of LSU to be saying that. They're in the same region, too. I would have expected to come out of them because they've got literal beef. Well, whether spoken or not, I mean, they literally just come out of the championship last year.
They've got a Chattermouth head coach and a Chattermouth star player.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right.
Even as little as I pay attention to the world of basketball, I'm at least aware of who Angel Reese is. But I swear I haven't heard a damn thing about her this season. And that I don't mean to say that in any way of disrespect. It has been dominated by Caitlin Clark. So I'm like, is Angel Reese even relevant to me? Does anyone give a shit about her? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I genuinely ask you because I have no
clue. I'm genuinely telling you, I have no idea. Yeah. But yeah, I'm like, that's the first thing I was like, if you tell your team that in the confidence of the locker room with no cameras around, I am fine with that. But if they're rolling, or you have a potential for someone to pull out their phone and record you, don't say it. Just keep your mouth shut. Because here's the thing. Mark Kellogg came in after Dana Pitzel, well, however you pronounce her last name, was one and done. She left in Minnesota after last season. Mark Kellogg comes in. He's an incredibly good coach from North Texas. Knows how to win games. That's not disputable. Or Stephen F. Austin. I'm sorry, it's where he came from. Not North. Ren Baker came from North Texas. I'm getting my Texas schools confused. There's so many of them in the Big 12, it's hard to keep track of them anymore. Even the ones that aren't in the Big 12, it's hard to keep track of them. It's such a big state. So you've got an undisputed winner. But this only ends well if you beat Princeton and then you beat Iowa. Because if you lose to Princeton, then you look downright moronic for making that comment. And if you get blown out by Iowa and Caitlin Clark drops 40 on you in the first half, you look even like this could potentially be very detrimental to the West Virginia women's basketball program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not saying it will, but I'm saying it could. Like, Kel, like if you make a statement out of this, like this, and you don't back it up, you look like a damn fool. And that, I don't care how much you want to talk about NIL money and stuff like that being what's driving recruiting now, players don't want to play for fools. And if they don't, like, some people might go, okay, he didn't back it up, or his team didn't back it up, but I appreciate him for making the comment. But that may be one out of five, and the other four go play somewhere else. And they don't come to Morgantown. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Speaking of those men's basketball, that men's basketball team, the head coach position is open as Josh Eilert was not brought back as the full-time head coach. I'm not going to ask you to grade a season because I know you didn't watch. But I also know that we all know the circumstances. So we're not going to get into particular details as to who's rumored and who's not. I don't expect any of us to have a conversation about that. I will, though, ask you about someone who wants his old job back. Bob Huggins said he was interviewed by a Pittsburgh radio television station, and he said that he wants to coach. He loves coaching. He wants to stay in the state of West Virginia, but he admitted he probably doesn't have much choice but to go out of state. And he was asked point blank if WV would give him a second chance, and he said yes. If there was a change in leadership, he didn't go any further. What do you make of Huggins' comments? And, well, let's just answer that first, then we'll get to the other one. So what do you make of what he said?
It's perfectly fine that he wants to coach and all of that stuff and has the aspirations and blah, blah, blah. But what I think is ridiculous is to, well, basically call for the heads of Baker and Gee. Now, I have not shied away from saying under certain scenarios Gee should be fired if scenarios occur or whatever like that. But to go out there and go, oh yeah, I'm pretty much requesting that they get fired so I have a chance to come back and all of that. I'm like, just shut up, man. But I also will say after that, again, I'll stick by. I don't want him back. You've already done enough damage. I don't want you back. Maybe think about that before you go take your next sip of alcohol.
Well, that's actually an interesting point because he actually said, I'm not an alcoholic, to which I would say bullshit. But there's kind of a war between boosters here. Ken Kendrick, the big-time booster who owns the Arizona Diamondbacks, who wrote the big check to the baseball program and got the ballpark reform, he is of the opinion, and he's been on record as saying this, that Huggins has no place in the university ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just do not let him back in this program. And I wish I could remember this other chap's name, but I can't. It was another booster who came out and said basically that Kendrick can have his opinion, but I know Huggins really well. He hasn't touched a drop of alcohol since, and he deserves a second chance. And the first thing I thought of is, oh, great. We're going to piss off someone with a lot of money no matter which way we go.
Yeah.
And that, here's the thing, that this made me have a realization that NIL is nothing but an ego trip for boosters. That's all it is. It's made to look like it's benefiting players. But let's face it, boosters, even more than they already can basically run the program because if you piss them off, they'll just stop giving you money. And money, more than it ever has been, drives college athletics. If you piss off a billionaire, guess what? You could kill your football or basketball program for the foreseeable future.
It's a very ridiculous thing to have to think about.
I'm not wrong, though.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. It's just, it's sad that has to be the consideration what guy is going to be donating to my school. And I'm going to be straight up here. In no scenario should anyone be donating to colleges, to public university. I mean, obviously private universities are a different thing, but to public universities. It just doesn't, none of it ever works out right. And one argument that I saw against it that I never really thought about some years ago, for the last X amount, but I saw it recently, was that a lot of the times these people donate this large sum of money, and next thing you know, a new building's being built with their name on it. Or more often than not, it's a new, entirely new building being built. And then after so many years, blah, 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 the money runs dry, and some other guy comes in, building gets torn down, new building's getting built, or the building that existed essentially isn't maintained as well for whatever reason. And it's just a never-ending cycle of why does this need to happen? Because really, it's just a vanity project for these people. I'm thoroughly convinced that majority of these donations and things are not for the sake of the program or the university they're donating to. It's simply because they want their name on some new shiny building. And that is partially due to my just absolute distrust of billionaires' motivations. But it's never sat right with me, especially to have college programs and college sports effectively have to live by their hand when these schools already get ridiculous amounts of money directed to them from the state. And I would imagine, I don't know if any federal money goes towards them, but at least state money.
I can't disagree with anything you said. I really can't, because I feel the same way. It's like, and sometimes you have to go a little bit further and go like, well, if you question, like, if you were seeking out the funds from someone outside of, you know, the state legislature, did you really need it? Yes, I'm sure to some degree it helps, but like, did you really need to go knocking on your sugar daddy's door? Did you really need to do that? Probably not.
I'm more so for the, if you're going to be donating to universities or in any way, it should just be in the form of scholarships.
Agreed.
I mean, I'm a direct benefit of that. So I got an amount. I don't even remember the amount, to be honest. But I got a scholarship my first year of grad school. I didn't even apply for it. I just, next thing I know, I get an email going, congratulations, you've got X amount of a scholarship. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And it was, you know, I can't even remember who it was, but it was in a foundation or something. And, like, that's the only instance where I can justify any money getting donated to schools or any kind of fund is it being in a scholarship fund, such that more students have the opportunity to go to school and go to school affordably. And it's sad that has to be the case too.
Exactly. That's a
whole nother discussion.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the only situation where I can think of it being acceptable.
One more point to having donations. We had kind of brought this up at some point over the last, you know, however long it's been a thing, that WVU said it would be open, not going to happen, but open to having sponsorships for athletic facilities like Mountaineer Field. For the love of God, can we not make it insert booster here, Mountaineer Field?
Mm-hmm.
I know Mylon Puskar wrote him a big check at some point. That's great. We don't need to go upping that. For the love of God, please no.
Yeah.
Don't make it insert booster here, WVU Coliseum. I already am not a big fan of it being Ken Kendrick Ballpark. I'm not really in favor of that. I didn't even like Wagoner Field in Monongalia County Ballpark. But at the same time, that pays for a new indoor facility for LUVU baseball, and in a northern school, that means everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one instance you can tie it to. Like, that's a direct benefit to the baseball program. Everything else is kind of like, well, who knows?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's everything except to talk about what we learned this week. And if memory serves, I think it's your turn to go first.
Yes, and I did. I found a very now this is courtesy of my my friend who sent it to me yesterday. And I was like, ooh. And now this is from it was reported by the SciShow channel on YouTube. The Hank Green is the runner of that. And it was about a drug on the market that is the first of its kind that's been FDA approved. Actually, technically two drugs in a way, but one being both gene therapy, but one of them is more specific in the type of gene therapy. So it is based on a technology that recently won the Nobel Prize and has been a favorite piece of thing of mine since I learned about it in you know my first couple of years of college, called CRISPR. And what that stands for is as a reminder, because it's I know I've brought it up before, but it's obviously really long and understandably hard to remember. It stands for clustered regularly interspersed palindromic repeats. And that's in relation to the structure of it, but it's effectively a part of the bacterial defense system, immune system, from viruses. So how it works in its natural state is that a bacteriophage, which is a virus that attacks bacterias, will attack a bacteria, inject its DNA or its genetic material into the bacteria, and what CRISPR will do is it effectively recognizes that similar in such a fashion, a similar fashion to how our antibodies recognize foreign materials, and it will recognize that, cut a piece of it, and then save that piece for later, for memory, such that if that type of bacteriophage comes back, it will be like, hey, wait a minute, I've seen you before, get the hell out of here, and effectively generate some type of immunity. But, so it was discovered, I believe it was in 95, in some bacteria, and it has since been developed as a way for us to edit genes, because you can, with the help of an enzyme called Cas9, and there are a bunch of other ones that can be, it could be CRISPR-Cas9, CRISPR so-and-so, insert some three letters and a number is basically the conventional naming system of all of these, but it's effectively a Swiss Army knife for gene editing. And before I get into an extreme backstory for the drug, you can use this to cut out genes, replace it with entirely, or cut out a gene, replace it with something else, and see what happens. Like all gene editing applications, the first thing we all think of is, how can we apply this medically? How can we use this to just eliminate genetic diseases entirely? Well, we are now approaching some realm of that for sickle cell anemia. So it's a genetic disease, and you can be a carrier for it and not be affected. But if you are with someone who has sickle cell anemia or is also a carrier, you have the chance of passing that on to your child. We all know what sickle cell anemia is. Your red blood cells, to some extent, some portion of them look like sickles. And what that does is it affects the ability to transport oxygen. And it also increases the risk of having a cardiovascular crises, like blood clots, strokes, things of that sort. Not good. It's they have to be wary of the temperature. They have to be wary of how close they are to a hospital. They have to be wary of what elevation they're at. Some NFL players have struggle or can't play at all in places like Colorado if they have sickle cell. And there has been a drug in the pipeline using CRISPR-Cas9 as a way to effectively cure this. And it goes under the regulatory name of Casgevy. But what it does is that, now this is something I learned in the process, was that I did not know that there are two types of hemoglobin in the body. One of them being called fetal hemoglobin, and as the name suggests, is only present in a fetus and is present for a very short amount of time in a newborn child's life. First couple months or so. But that has a different genetic... It is coded for by a different gene than normal hemoglobin, or than adult hemoglobin, effectively. So what Casgevy is designed to do is that it functions by editing out effectively the silencer of the gene for fetal hemoglobin and allowing fetal hemoglobin to be produced in adult patients with sickle cells, such that that fetal hemoglobin overwhelms your, in a way, your the rest of your sick hemoglobin, and now you effectively don't have sickle cell anemia. I mean, you still carry the genes for it, but you're not affected by sickle cell anemia anymore. There was a few patients of note that went from having 3 or 4 cardiovascular crises a year to in two or three years after their trials, and still receiving the... I don't know if they have to be reintroduced this drug every now and then, that it didn't answer, but they've not been back to the hospital for anything related to sickle cell anemia. And a majority of the patients, obviously there's always some that either don't succeed or don't have nearly as strong of an effect, but a majority of the patients saw extreme benefits. And so that has recently been approved by the FDA. And it can now be prescribed to patients. The two problems are: one, you have to have a doctor or a facility that is trained to administer it, and or even knows about it. To be fair, but is trained to administer it, and those are few and far between at the moment. Naturally, that will increase as more people become aware of it. But the other downside is that it is expected that an administration of this drug will cost you or the insurance, or both in some combination, probably, more likely, in upwards of $2 million. So there's always the downside of these types of things.
Always.
Another one proved in the same realm, thing. Now, I don't remember much about this one because I was too focused on CRISPR, but it uses lint, where it takes the shell of a lentivirus and effectively encodes, it is used to carry the genetic material of something you want to express. Similar to the way that the mRNA is used in the COVID vaccines. It codes, that mRNA carries the code for of the COVID protein or so your body recognizes it. But in this case, you're not generating immunity. You're generating some gene that can be transcribed to then, again, overwhelm the sickle cell anemia. And I don't remember exactly how that one functions, though. But it's also developed for as a drug for sickle cell, and is also upwards of $2 million.
Good Lord.
Yeah. But so yes, something medically applicable in the world of CRISPR-Cas9 that is can actively be prescribed, and we can see its effects in the real world outside of just a petri dish and an article going, "Hey, in 10 years you might have this."
Well, I, as usual, have something a little bit more positive. I learned this week that International Delight, the coffee creamer makers, they sell 15-ounce cans of iced coffee that has already been pre-flavored. And two of those flavors I really want to try. I actually think about those two really ones. Oreo and Reese's.
Cans, you say?
I say cans.
Huh.
What got me, too.
I knew they had, like, glass bottles, because I see them in the coffee aisle all the time when I walk down, you know, grab my grounds or something. But I did not know they sold them in cans. Nor did I manage to the flavors that they sold in the bottles. But,
well, weirdly enough, it just came up as a Facebook ad on some random coupon website I have never heard of before. But the link it provides... But here's the thing. The link looked legit. I clicked on it, and it didn't, you know, blow up my phone, so that was good. And then I looked on their website, and sure enough, yeah, they sell them. Huh. Now, here's what's weird about it. The only place you can find them is Dollar General.
Dollar General has a way of, like, cornering markets and weird things like that. Like, it was a while back ago, they was the only place you could get the, Maui Pineapple Mountain Dew.
I've never heard such a thing.
It was a couple of years ago. Actually, it might have been more than a couple of years ago. But point is, yeah, they get weird exclusives.
Like,
need to corner the canned coffee market? I don't know.
Because the bottle market wasn't doing it for him? I don't know. I had no idea. Here's the thing. I went out yesterday. Railroader who I know had taken and two friends that I know had come up to Railfan RJ Corman in Mount Hope. And so they were like, okay, well, I'm going to go out there and meet him. But I'm like, I'm driving right by Dollar General. I have to at least go in there and see if I can find it. And I think they were like $2.65 for a 15-ounce can, which truthfully is not awful. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, what I would like to pay for it, but it's not awful. I can do $2.65 every now and again. Like, that's not off. That's not, that's less than a, you know, cup from Dunkin'. And I might actually like Oreo flavored coffee. I don't know. But they didn't have them at the one I looked at. They had the big, huge creamer things. I'm like, I don't need a big, huge creamer thing. I have one at home. I don't need two. So I'm like, okay, whatever. Oh, speaking of coffee and flavors and me, I use an app called Fetch. It's basically you scan your receipt and you get points. They were having a thing today for 3,000 points. Go to Walmart and buy 24 count Keurig K cups. I have 48, now 47 because I already use one. Cookie dough coffee flavored.
Huh.
Once. Yeah. And you know what? I tried one. I normally don't. I normally was like, you know what? I don't really feel like I need, but I had to try it. I'm like, you know what? Sure, it's like five, whatever. Sure, I don't need to be drinking coffee, but I'm too damn curious. I need to know. So I tried. And it really wasn't that bad. The blueberry coffee creamer I had with it really made it almost like a blueberry chocolate chip cookie. Mm-hmm. Which, believe you me, is good.
I have a white chocolate raspberry, which I've had before, and a caramel macchiato flavor in the Chobani, like the real cream creamers. But I only use those in iced coffee because, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is. I genuinely can't tell you, but I don't like dairy creamer in hot coffee. It never, like, it affects the flavor in such a way. I don't know what it is. I genuinely do not know how to describe it. It just doesn't taste right.
It doesn't sit well.
So I only use, like, non-dairy creamer in for no other reason than it maintains its flavor. If for what that means, I don't know. but I use Chobani creamer with like pre-made iced coffee or pre-brewed iced coffee. La Colombie is the one I like to grab. But mainly because I like their pre-done like mochas that they have cans of in the refrigerated aisle. But when you say cookie dough, it reminds me like one of the, like, I think one the first Dunkin' coffee that I can recall ever having was my freshman year of college, and a friend of ours lived not too far away from I think he was in Saberton, I think he lived in Saberton, and there was a Dunkin' there, and we went to his house. He worked at that Dunkin', but we went to his house to study chemistry because we were all in the same class, and 75% of us didn't know what the hell we were doing. And so we stopped by the Dunkin' and he got us all. He got it the way he liked to make it, in the lodges. And I was mind blown at the time by how big the lodges were. But they were the cookie dough iced coffees with a metric fuckload of cream and sugar. I mean, absolute ridiculously diabetes inducing amounts, I would imagine.
Isn't that the only way to do it?
Yeah. And especially when you're going to be staying up all night studying chemistry.
Well, of course. Of course.
We did get a few games of NHL in at the as a break, and I didn't know what I was doing at all other than I could beat the hell out of the other player.
That's the most fun part of the game.
Exactly.
That's the best part of the game is when you drop the gloves. That's it. That's what everyone – if you honestly, and I mean this sincerely, if you are the first time playing – an NHL game, and your desire is not to drop the gloves, the first chance you get, you are doing it wrong. I mean that sincerely. Like, I'm sorry, but that's just how you do it. That's just, I don't make the rules.
I just report them.
Yeah. I don't make the rules. I'm just saying. I'm just saying the facts are what they are. That's all I'm doing. Okay, well, we have ourselves a finished episode. So, we shall be... I actually made a boo-boo. I don't know if you caught it in our last episode. I kind of said that we were... that our episode was meant... Like, I got our episode number wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I said it was,
32 or
33? 32. Yeah, I said 32 was, I said 31 was 32. There we go. That's what it was. Because I titled the episode we just released, the real episode 32. So, always fun. Always fun. So with that, we shall be back next week to discuss anything else that comes across. I'm sure we'll talk about some upsets because, damn, I don't know if you realize this, we went the entire time without mentioning the men's bracket in college basketball. I don't know if we should be proud or if we should just, I don't know if we should be proud or not, but we did it. So with that, we shall say so long for now. And until we meet again, Darren, take us home.
Adios, everybody.